Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about comfort zones. And you know we talked about that a little while ago, but there were lots of questions, so I suppose I should have put this in the title. But this is like comfort zone part two, because we're going to be talking some more about what to do about expanding comfort zones. Yeah, because we all have some comfort zones. It's kind of an Americanism, isn't it? It's kind of an expression. We're going to talk about what it means, and then we're going to be talking about how to make them bigger, how to expand them for ourselves, for the group dynamic, and for the individual participants, so that we can all reach consensus and agreement and go forward and, yes, have a successful outcome. So as we often do on this show, let's define what we're talking about first. What is a comfort zone within our context? Within the context of a mediation, an alternative dispute resolution, a workshop, a seminar, a negotiation, what is a comfort zone within our context, the context of what we do? Yeah. Oh, I see we have lots of people. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for your participation. We've got a lot of agreement, actually. Jocelyn and quite a few others are saying that your comfort zone is your area of expertise. Yeah, I know this. It's my area of expertise. I am comfortable in telling other people what to do in this area because I've got a lot of experience in it. I know what I'm doing. Yeah, and that is an important part of having a comfort zone, isn't it? That we understand what it is that we're doing. We feel, well, yes, we feel comfortable. Mm-hmm, yeah. Kumia and others are saying that it's our area of expertise and it's issues that we've handled before. Right? Yeah. We don't necessarily have a degree in it. Don't have a piece of paper or something that says that we know, but we've handled these issues before. We're real familiar with it. And a lot of people are talking about the fact that we actually know the participants from before. Excuse me. Oh, excuse me. I'm going to sneeze again. Oh, my goodness. Thank you. Everybody's saying bless you. Thank you. Thank you for your kind thoughts. Yes, it shows at the live show, doesn't it? That won't get edited out. My goodness. Must have gotten a dust bunny up my nose. So Kumi and others are talking about the fact that we've handled the issues before, which kind of makes it our area of expertise, but we think, at least I think, about expertise as something that we're actually got a qualification for, that we've done a lot. But sometimes we've seen it before, right? We've seen these kinds of issues. We've seen this kind of dispute, maybe. We've seen this kind of, yeah, that's a good point. People are saying this kind of preconceived notion, right? Because maybe we've dealt with this area before, or people from the same culture before, right? Or in some reason have seen a reaction before. There's quite a few people, and thank you for all of your participation, who are kind of indicating that that's like bigotry and racism and like that. I'm going to just call it preconceived notions. I really am. Because I don't like to have a negative context on what people think. Because sometimes, yes, thank you. Kumi and others are saying sometimes their preconceived notions are caused by upbringing, by cultural values that aren't the same as the other people, sometimes, different kinds of cultures, background. Yeah, and I like to think of that all as I didn't really know it personally. I just was taught it by some third party I respected. And now that I'm here, we can reach consensus and get along sufficiently to go for the common good. Yeah. I don't, just like I say in the beginning, I don't require that you be friends, and you shouldn't either. You don't necessarily have to want to marry into each other's families or even go have a cup of coffee together. But for this point in time, for these specific issues, we will get along sufficiently to reach consensus. That's it. That's the rule. Nothing better, nothing more, nothing less. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's what we need to be able to do. Yeah. So, issues that we've seen before, people maybe that we've seen before, right? Yeah, Bob and others are calling that a negotiation between known parties, people we know from before. I get that a lot. Probably you do too, just because you have kind of a list of clients, right? Yeah. So you see the same parties, actually the same parties sometimes, the same people. And so that you've got an idea of them, right? And that's within your comfort zone. It's your comfort zone because you already know them and you've got a pretty good idea how they're going to react and what you should do about it, right? And then you've got, if you deal with multinationals, I deal with some big companies, big corporations, you've got levels of people who oftentimes have a similar response. So you don't go in with a complete preconceived notion, I hope, because that would be a really bad idea. But you do have an idea of how they're going to respond, right? Yeah. You really kind of do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, specific participants. Yeah, Gary, another thing, similar issues in groups, assess the situation and respond in an expected manner. Yeah, they kind of do, and that's your comfort zone. And then you have to expand your comfort zone, right? Because it's not what you expected when they do something different. Got to be flexible, and you got to listen. Mm-hmm. So, how are we going to expand? That's our topic today. Because we talked about comfort zones, prior shows archived, recipeforpeacenow.com. Mm-hmm. And so we've talked about comfort zones before. But this is expanding comfort zones. How are you going to expand? Let's start with the group one. Because the group is kind of an individual in its way. The group has a dynamic. And sometimes the group itself, which is the conglomerate thought, the ideas of all the people, sometimes it needs to be expanded, what we think, what we'll accept, what we think is right. Mm-hmm. Because that's what it always comes down to, what is right? What do we really think is the proper thing? Mm-hmm. And it's important to know that, and it's also important to know how to expand it. So how are we going to expand the group comfort zone? Monica says, by first recognizing the boundaries so that the leader can gradually create consensus and compromise. Yes, the first thing you have to do is recognize it. Yeah, and I like that you said the word boundaries. Because comfort zones do have boundaries, and it's not a problem if we need to expand it. Because people go, oh, my God, we've hit a snag. We've hit a problem. No. A comfort zone is a zone, right? It's something that we like to be in. But those boundaries can get expanded. It's flexible. And so by first recognizing the boundaries, so the leader can gradually create consensus and compromise, you have to recognize that people are having to step out of their comfort zone. I personally acknowledge it. And I tell everyone we're going to do that as an adventure, as a group. Yes. And it's a mighty fine thing. And quite honestly, I do think it's a mighty fine thing. I honestly do. I think that it's important. And I think that it's important to understand that this is not a problem. It is life. It is good. It is something that we want to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it is desirable. Mm-hmm. Yeah. To expand our comfort zones because we're in it as a team. We're in it together, right? Yeah. It has to be presented not as by the leader. You kind of tell, I actually come right out and say this, that you need to, we need to think a little outside the box. We need to go together to find a solution, right? Yes, very important. Very, very, has to be put in a positive light, right? And not in an, oh my God, but in a let's go, do, let's find, let's explore our options, right? And let's find the answer together. Mm-hmm. That's the group dynamic. That's the team. That's the consensus. That's the we're going to find it together because we want to. And that inherently stretches our comfort zones, at least for this instance, right? Not required forever and ever and ever, just for this instance, for this point in time, for this group. Yeah, that's all we'd like. We'd like to be able to go forward now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And really be able to say, here, we've got it. We've got this. We can handle it. Yeah, that's the ticket. That's the idea. We're going to go forward as a group. Yeah, which is our group dynamic, right? Right. So we can expand as a group, as a team, as an adventure. Yeah. Cheryl and others say by you can expand the group comfort zone by encouraging interaction so you see each other as individuals as well as group representatives. Yes, a lot of times I see a group where the people are representatives from different groups, right? Because the issues are big and we're trying to get together on them. Because I really do think that there's strength in numbers, especially if you're trying to change something that politicians have their hands on, right? They get elected in the United States, which is very fortunate for us. But in a lot of areas, at least meeting the media needs a lot of consensus, a lot of voice, a lot of group dynamic working as a team, right? And so we get together, and the people in the room represent a point of view. They may hold it also. I mean, I'm not saying they don't believe it. But it's not just them, right? I like to call that the invisible people in the room. They're the invisible people who our participants kind of report to, right? Yeah, they tell them how it's going. And that's a big invisible participant. That is important. And it's important to be able to say, look, this is what we're going to decide. And we need to get to know each other as individuals and as agents, so to speak. People calling them agents. I suppose that's really true in a kind of a non-technical way because they can't really sign for the group. But yeah, and we need to be able to say, look, this is how we're going to get together. We're going to reach consensus. We're going to have to go outside maybe our representation comfort zone, right? Yeah, and kind of think for ourselves and say, you know, this would be a really good idea. I will present it as done to my group. Yeah, as done is the key to that, right? Yeah, because you want to say, look, this is the way it needs to be, and present it as such. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that you don't have pushback on it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, by encouraging interaction, so you see each other as individuals as well as group representatives. You know, at the end of this show, hopefully, because sometimes we don't make it to the recipes. Well, it's such a wonderful conversation. But I know a lot of you would like me to, so I'm going to try to leave time. At the end of the show, we talk about Recipe for Peace Now and the getting together over food, over a potluck, over let's all take a break and have a treat. Yeah, it's a really good idea because it allows us to see each other as individuals, which is the idea, to see each other as reasonable human beings, just of different opinion. Let's get closer in opinion so that we can reach agreement and consensus, right? Yeah, so that's the idea of the thing. Mm-hmm. And it's really a valid idea and it works. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So how else can we expand the group comfort zone? You know, this is a very good point that Dorothy and other people are making. And we make it, too, at Recipe for Peace. Now, thank you for being here. I know that a lot of you have heard this idea before here. And that is you expand the group comfort zone by making the group comfortable, by making it convivial, a convivial atmosphere. I would like to remain a member of this group. It's not a chore. It takes some time, but I like it. I like going. I like dealing with the people or really getting somewhere. It's kind of like a party because there's food. Oftentimes we have a bottle of wine, if nobody objects. That seems like a very nice thing, don't you? Yeah. We're usually after work, so it's in the evening. And, yeah, yes, there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong even if you've got a breakfast meeting. People are advocating. Everyone knows what a mimosa is. It's champagne and orange juice. It's kind of a breakfast drink, at least. At least in the opinion of many of us, including myself. But it's very pleasant. It makes like brunch when you have that, if you're having a breakfast meeting or even a lunch meeting. Nothing wrong with a nice glass of wine or a glass of champagne if no one objects to it. Yeah, you have to ask because sometimes people have prohibitions. But even if they don't want I have friends who don't drink at all. Even if they don't want it, you could ask if they mind if others do, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. And, you have to find... Well, I just ask if you object, and I ask you to tell me truthfully because it's fine if you do. People are saying sometimes people don't drink because they've had a problem in the past, and you don't want to be like a temptation. I come right out. I don't ask why you don't drink because it's none of my freaking business, right? Yeah. But if you don't drink and you can't be around it, well, you should say, because I'm going to ask outright, do you have an objection to it? I'm going to send it around in my survey. Remember, we take a survey about allergies, prohibitions, and don't eat so that we don't accidentally bring stuff. It includes wine. Mm-hmm. I don't serve anything heavier. It's just me. Yeah, a lot of you are in favor of actual liquor cabinet. Hey, go for it. If that makes a convivial group dynamic, you got to know your group, and hopefully they won't overdo that, right? I have no objection. Yes, and it depends on the group. It kind of depends on where you are, too. If you're like in a conference room or something. Yeah, and yes, I don't usually, it doesn't mean that I have an objection. It just means that I'm more in favor of champagne and wine and things. I don't know why. I think it's because I think it's lighter and people can kind of sip it all evening long and not really not be able to drive home. You know what I mean? I just think it leads to less problems if you have lighter alcoholic beverages like wine and beer. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, people are asking about beer. Same thing as wine, right? Yeah. And oftentimes I have beer. If I am having wine, I would have some beer also, especially if I have mixed sex in the room. And it depends who your people are. You got to kind of judge that. Yeah, if you have no refrigeration, of course, you do something that doesn't need refrigeration. Yeah, everything we know. Yes, so anyway, so recognize the boundaries and see each other as individuals. Yeah, by encouraging interaction. Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. And a convivial atmosphere. I do think a convivial atmosphere adds to the group comfort zone because it makes us feel more comfortable with each other. And that's really the key to the group comfort zone. Comfortable with each other. Comfortable that we can deal with each other. That we can reach consensus and a successful outcome. Because, yeah, we can handle this. We can deal with each other. It's all good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. This is an interesting point that Glenn and others are making. In order to expand the group comfort zone, which is really our ability to work together, he says you need to define the benefits of working together. Yeah, actually come out and tell people why we should, because they might be wondering. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people don't see it. Yeah, define the benefits of working together. Come right out and say how come we should do this together now. Because it's important to all of us. But the question is, how? Why? Yeah? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got that. I got that it's important. But in what way? Tell me exactly so that I understand it properly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. This is true, too, when you're talking about the group dynamic, and which is the working together, the teamness of the group and their comfort zone. Harrison and others are saying you have to gradually introduce new ideas so that they have ownership and that it benefits everyone. Yeah, gradually introduce new ideas so there is ownership that it benefits everyone. If I, as lead, well, it depends on the group. I'm going to say it depends again. Oftentimes, some groups, somewhat culturally driven, some groups really want to just be told what to do and assigned what to do and given real kind of specific guidelines, right? They really do. They just want to be told what to do and how to do it now. Nothing wrong with that, but you have to know that about the group. That's the key to it. Mm-hmm. And if you've got a group like that, it's a little bit unusual, but you're the leader, and you take control, and you seriously lead. This is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it, and this is what your role in it is going to be. And when we get all done, this is what the outcome is. Nothing wrong with that, but it needs to be the right group. Pardon me. Took a sip of water. More often, at least for me, and it may be because I am in the United States, and this is, of course, a global show, and you may be in a place where the culture is more, show me what to do. I don't want to sit around and talk about it. You're the leader, lead, right? But sometimes you need to gradually introduce new ideas because the participants want to think that you are facilitating the group, not leading it. and they will accept the idea and get to a successful outcome in this century, right? They will accept it much better if they, what we call, own it. If they accept that it is their idea, right? Yeah. That it is something that they thought of, that the group came up with, right? Yes. You gradually introduce it into their minds, really, into the team, into the idea, so that it can be embraced as something that they thought up. It will create what we call buy-in, B-U-Y-I-N. They will want to do it because, of course, it is their idea, right? Buy-in. It's a real important idea because you will get faster and more serious consensus. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you have buy-in. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they all accept it. They go, yeah, that's a really good idea. Well, yes, it is. Thank you for asking. But, yeah, they had to think about it. They had to find it themselves, so to speak. Yes, you need buy-in. Need them to really think about it. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, they have a buy-in. So now we've talked about the group dynamic, and we want to leave a little bit of time at the end of the show if we can. And working as a team, really, and the team dynamic, which is what the group dynamic really is. Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, this is, before we leave this, this is an interesting, Margie's having an interesting thought, too. We increase the comfort zone by giving the group and each individual the ability and encouragement to accept new ideas. Ah. New ideas are hard, right? You've got to really think, which is hard. And you might have to go back to your group and explain to them that you had to think and we have a new idea, which is possibly extra hard. Yeah. So you've got a bunch of layers, and people need to be able to be encouraged and to be able to accept them, right? Yeah, and not just reject them, not because they're bad, but because it's not the way things have always been done, and it would be easier to come back to whoever it is that's watching us and say we're doing it the way things have always been done, because that takes no thought, right? We know that's good. So you need to increase, encourage and expand comfort zones by giving the group and each individual the ability and encouragement to accept new ideas. And you know what? We need the ability and encouragement to accept new ideas and go beyond our comfort zone, right? We need that. Not just them, but us too. We need to be able to say, look, this is what we're going to do. And it's going to be good. It's going to be successful. And it's a good idea. It's the right way to go. Right? Yeah. And sometimes that's scary. It is. It's scary. But it's all right. We can handle it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, that's expanding ours, right, in addition to theirs. So what can we do to expand our own comfort zone so we can be more effective and we can encourage new ideas and to accept them? And we, as leader, can accept the new idea. Yeah. You know, we're not perfect either. We have to think about stuff. We have to wonder if that's all right. Yeah. So what can we do to expand our comfort zone, which will make us more effective? This is a good point Allison and others are making, and it's inclusion. Be inclusive of all types of people and their ideas. Be inclusive. I really, really like to reach out to groups, organizations, who are truly opposed to the viewpoint of my group. Yeah. They're the other side, so to speak. I like to reach out to them. I like to be inclusive. Because sometimes whatever it is that stands between us is somewhat based on a misunderstanding or a misconception. And we are actually closer than it seems. Now, that's not always true. Sometimes the issues are very opposed to each other. Yeah. Yes, people giving examples. And sometimes they're very polarized. And you either are in or you're out. You know what I mean? There's not too much crossover. People are using abortion rights as an example in the United States. This is true. Abortion is legal, but there's still a lot of groups that are still fighting. And they don't even like each other. I mean, really, mostly. But they are, that's a real polarized issue. But sometimes you have groups that have ideas about the same issue that are not the same, but they all want, basically speaking, the same outcome. Yeah? Sometimes, I see that sometimes with big groups that are having an issue. Let's think about this. Well, I don't want to breach client confidentiality. The easiest way to think about it is sometimes there are groups that are fighting for research and fighting for a cure for some sort of a disease. But they have different ways of going about it, right? They all want the same thing. Breast cancer is a real good point. You've got a lot of big organizations that have ideas about how to eradicate breast cancer. And we can all agree that that would be a really mighty fine thing, right? Right. But they've got different ideas on what should be done and who should be financed and how the money should be raised and, dare I say, how much should go to administrative costs. I know that's one of my little picadillos. But all of these things are true, and they're all groups that want to keep their own power. They want to keep their own status. What I'm telling you is they don't want to merge with another group or, well, I don't know if it's fair to say find a cure. People are saying they don't want to find a cure either because then they'll be out of business. I don't think they're evil. I don't think they are bad people. It's just that they have different ideas and different leadership. But they could be gotten together and make a more concerted front. Yeah, really combine forces, combine research, but they're not in agreement with each other and there's a power play involved. Yeah, people want to keep their nice job. They want to keep their position of power. Pardon me, they want to get up on stage and be the head fundraiser for research. You have to understand all that. And you have to make a comfort zone that encompasses all of them without making anyone give up their spot. Yeah. Nobody wants their organization to be the one that folds into another. because you lose your power, you lose your position, you lose your salary maybe. I mean, it's maybe as simple as that. Yes. So they need to work together and expand their comfort zone to allow that and to see the bigger picture, which is a cure for breast cancer. Mm-hmm. Do they do that? I see it from the outside. I have not been brought in. And my impression is that there's a lot of waste because there's a lot of duplication. And there's a tremendous amount of advertising, administrative type expenses. The fight to keep the organization going and not so much to cure the underlying disease. Because, yes, the point is being made that if they cure it, they're out of business. I don't know the people well enough, but that might be an underlying factor. And it is something that is not spoken, right? But you have to understand through listening, through body language, yes, to understand that you've all got a common goal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, there is also the question of unequal in funding, really, more so than anything else. There's one huge one. It's called Komen. And there's a lot of smaller ones. And so, yeah, it all has to be worked through to make a expanded comfort zone group dynamic that reaches consensus and agreement to go forward without really stepping on someone's toes, right? Yeah. So how else can we as leaders expand our own comfort zone and be more effective? Mm-hmm. Yes. Max and others are saying you need to listen to all ideas and incorporate them into the thinking. Yes, give everybody a chance to listen. Ladies and gentlemen, my friends, I am going to take one moment here because I need to cough and to blow my nose. So give me 1 second. I'll be right back. I'm sorry. It's kind of like this is a live show, and I really need to do this now. Hang on a second. Hello, I'm back. Could you hear that? I kind of blew my nose. Yes, people are going, yes, you're getting a cold. Well, I hope not. I think it's just some sort of seasonal thing. And I sneezed before. Anyway, we're back. Here we go. Yeah, you need to be flexible. It's like being inclusive. Listen to everybody. I go in sometimes and I'm pretty darn sure what's happening. I am. Because I've seen it before, I have expertise, I've dealt with the people, I've dealt with the issues. You know how you kind of see the same things-ish. And then there's a twist. And then somebody comes up with an idea that we haven't actually thought about, but it's a really good idea. And it's really something we should have thought about, we just accidentally didn't, right? Yeah. And it's all very interesting, and you have to be flexible. You have to listen. You have to be inclusive. That's how leaders expand their comfort zone. Mm-hmm. Leanne and others are also saying that in order to expand our comfort zone, we no longer have to listen and be flexible. But we need to know and we need to ask for help. Yeah. I know some people have difficulty with that. Yeah, ask for help. Say, I'm not sure. I'm not real positive if that's a good idea or not. Let's go ask. Let's go find an expert, right? And we've done shows on experts, archived Recipe for Peace Now. Com, right? We've had some shows where we've talked about getting experts, and they're not necessarily people that have a degree or something. They are people who have experience, right? Ask what they think of that. Let's ask if it's a good idea. Let's ask if it's been tried, yeah, and what the result was. And if the result wasn't so hot, wasn't so good, how come? And what should have been done in hindsight, right? Because hindsight is always perfect. And sometimes you can get other people's hindsight so that you can use it now before you make the same mistake. Yes, a lot of times my favorite experts are those who have worked on it and kind of not made it, right? But they're very interesting because they've really got an idea of what should have been done. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So ask for help. Mm-hmm. Thomas says that you should embrace competition and change. Yes, why not? I am usually the hired, paid, third-party impartial. But if you're not, you might get somebody else who has more expertise, right? Yeah. Embrace competition and change. And that will expand your comfort zone, especially if you need to have someone be like a co-leader. Share the leadership role. Mm-hmm. I've seen it done. I don't usually do it. I don't know that I... There's not usually a real reason, but I think one leader is kind of a good idea because then everybody knows who to turn to, right? But you might. You might co-lead. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Brody and others are saying that in order to expand our comfort zone as leaders, we need to make a deliberate effort to be able to empathize. A deliberate effort to be able to empathize. Remember, and we've talked about this in prior shows, archived recipeforpeacenow.com, that empathy is not the same as agreement. Empathy is understanding, right? Yes. And we expand our comfort zone by understanding someone else's position and why they're taking it. Mm-hmm. Yes. A lot of people are saying you ask the 5W questions. And the key to that, of course, is to really listen. Mm-hmm. Yes. The 5W questions are our absolute favorites because they tell us what we need to know. They are who, what, where, when, and why. Mm-hmm. Because if we see some sort of opinion or behavior or intransigence, we want to know who, what, where, when, and why. Because then we can reach the negotiated consensus. We can head towards the middle because we understand why you've got that stance, why you've got that opinion, why you're insisting on a solution that may or may not be the most expedient, right? Who, what, where, when, and why? And the question, the real trick to who, what, where, when, and why, the 5W questions, is to actually listen to the answers. And I say this because most people listen not to think about the person and to have empathy, the speaker, but they listen to formulate their own response, right? Is this a sin? No, of course it's not a sin. But it also doesn't make our ability to reach consensus any better, right? Yeah. You want to listen with an open mind to the answers of the five questions. Mm-hmm. Damira says that all of us have preconceived notions due to prior experience and ground. It gives a concept of what is right, even if you're the third party impartial. Yeah, we're people, right? We have opinions. We have an idea of right from wrong that is an idea instilled really in childhood, probably. What is, pardon me, oh, my voice is going. What it is that is the proper thing, right? Yeah. We have an idea like that. And because we have that, sometimes we have a real personal opinion. And as the third party impartial, we have to think about that, because that's no way to expand the comfort zone unless we can do it gradually and steer us to a practical outcome. I do like a practical outcome. I like to see success. I like to get it done, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which leads us to really the next question. What should we both, leaders and participants, do to expand our comfort zones and encourage resolution, right? Because we really want a practical outcome, a practical resolution. Mm-hmm. So what should we do? Hussein and others are making a real good point that you need to embrace the process. That's really one of the key things, to embrace the process, embrace the idea of what's going to be done, right? We need to embrace the process, embrace the team effort. That is our comfort zone, to get it done is the key. Yes. Mm-hmm. Embrace the process. I like it. And it really is an important concept, because it tells us what it is that we need to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Embrace the process. Mm-hmm. Yes. This is a good point, too. Anne and others are saying to make theory and ideas into practicality so everyone can participate in the solution. Yeah. Well, you know, we like theory on this show. We like it as well as anybody. But we really like practicality. We like to get it done. We like to reach a conclusion. We like to understand that we have now, we've got this, right? We've got it handled. Mm-hmm. Yes. And we want to go forward and reach a conclusion that allows us to really be able to understand what it is that we need to do, how we need to expand our comfort zone, so that we can reach our outcome, we can reach our common goal. Mm-hmm. Now, thank you all for being here and for your wonderful conversation. Let's do one recipe, because people really like it and are disappointed if we don't get to them. So I've been trying to do better time-wise. Excuse me. Oh, isn't that weird? My voice seems to be going today. Goodness gracious. So, yes, I'm going to say exactly what I usually say before we talk about food. You're going to want to have some food in the room. It is a tool, really, because when you reach the point where you need to have a timeout, we could have one that keeps everybody interested and everybody in the room and everybody talking about something that is not going to be a problem, because they all wanted to, well, everybody likes to eat and it smells good and everything, and people have brought something. If you're going to do that, and you are, you need to take a survey ahead of time. You need to ask if anybody has a food allergy, a food prohibition, or a religious prohibition to food. Yeah, could be something that they just don't eat or something that their culture says not to eat. You take this survey, you pass it around, right? Also, when people bring food, they need to bring a list, not just the name of what it is, but what is in it, so that I can run my eye down the ingredients and see if I can eat it. Yeah, see if it's something that I can eat. I also think that we should have at least one safe recipe. Now, what's a safe recipe? Well, it's something that my people would be familiar with. We've taken the survey, so nobody can't eat it, right? And it doesn't have too many ingredients. It's safe. My safe may be different than yours because I'm in the United States, and a curry, for example, would be very unusual. But this is a global show. It might be much more usual than any of the things I think is safe. So it's not necessarily a safe recipe for you, but it would be for me. We're going to do a chicken stew with dumplings. Gosh, I like this recipe. You know, a lot of times people ask if the recipe can be doubled and tripled. You know how many people you've got. The answer to this is yes and no. I would make it, if you're going to make four of them, you know, four times as much or even twice as much, I would use as many pots as you need to and not make it a huge, deep pot because you need to have the dumplings float to the top is what it really is. If you're going to do that and use just a huge pot with lots and lots of chicken and just make chicken stew, go for it, but don't do the dumpling part because they need to bob. They need to be on top. This is kind of a weird thing to say, but you need... It's more of a shallow, wide pan idea than it is a real deep one. Does that make sense? Yeah, not a real big stock pot, soup pot, big high thing. If you do that, just make the vegetables and the chicken and add something. With this recipe, I actually serve rice on the side, just white rice. Do you know why? Because this is a very old family recipe, and my grandmother did it. But I think it's delicious, and it soaks up the broth. So there. Dumplings and rice. There you go. So, this is chicken stew with dumplings. We've got about 8 chicken quarters, 8 nice pieces of chicken. Might be drumsticks and thighs. I usually do it that way. I'm not big on the wings. I don't think they have too much meat on them. They're kind of messy. I do drumsticks and thighs. Mm-hmm. Let's have a couple tablespoons of oil. Let's have 6 carrots that we're going to chop up. Let's have about 3 parsnips. This kind of white vegetable is really nice in this. We're going to chop that up. 3 little turnips, if you can find them, chop them up. Mm-hmm. Let's have 3 cups of chicken stock. Mm-hmm. I like a little bit of spice to this. And you know, and it's not really a garlicky thing. I'm going to add a couple tablespoons of Worcestershire sauce. It's kind of like a little steak sauce, a little spicy sauce. You can add soy sauce for a little bit of salt, right? In fact, I've done that. I like the light soy sauce. It's less salt because the chicken stock, I don't make my own. I confess this. I get it out of a box, in all truth and honesty, but I get it out of a container in the store. And it's a little bit salty. Right? Unless you get the low-sodium kind. So you can judge the salt on this. Let's have a couple of fresh rosemary sprigs, right? And you know that I'm going to add a couple of chopped garlic cloves for a little extra. Mm-hmm. I personally like a lot of white raisins in this. You can use dark raisins if you'd like. I think the white ones look better. And they kind of, raisins are kind of hard, right? But they kind of plump up in the cooking process, right? And so they get all yummy and soft and kind of not dried anymore. Mm-hmm. And so they're fabulous. I like an entire cup because I like the raisin part. And did I mention I'm serving rice? And the raisins go really nice with the rice. That's the chicken stew part. This is the dumpling part of the recipe, the dumpling ingredients. You can choose not to do the dumplings if you're going to make a huge pot and quadruple the recipe. But if you do, you're going to need to not do the dumpling part because they need to flow. Let's have a cup and two-thirds, because we don't want 2 cups. A cup and two-thirds of self-rising flour, right? Mm-hmm. Let's have a half cup of shortening. And, you know, we put rosemary sprigs in the stew and like that. Let's have just a tablespoon a chopped fresh rosemary leaves. Just take it off the sprigs and like that and chop it up real, real fine so that it's delicious and not kind of prickly when you go to eat it. Now, I like to take the skin off the chicken, so that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take the skin off the breasts and the, the drumsticks and thighs. Mm-hmm. We're going to heat the oil in a nice big saucepan. Put the chicken in, cook it until it's golden, turn around like that. Yeah, because we want to kind of seal in the juice and also brown the outside of the chicken. Mm-hmm. All done, you use your slotted spoon, you put a paper towel on a plate, put the chicken over there. And let's get the excess fat out of the pot. Mm-hmm. We still got oil in the pot, though, right? We didn't wipe it or anything. We're going to add the carrots and the parsnips and the turnips. Cook it all around. You might not have to drain the fat, depending on how your chicken was. Mm-hmm. What, 5 minutes until they kind of got a nice color to them. We're going to throw the chicken back in our pot. It's a one-pot thing. We're not going to make a whole bunch of pots and things. We're not on television. Yes, there's nobody washing our dishes. So we're going to all the vegetables, the carrots and the whole bit, are turned around, cooked a little bit in the oil, 5 minutes. Let's put the chicken back. We don't want to have too much grease in the bottom of the pan is the key to it, because now we're going to add the stock, and we don't want this to be greasy. So you got to look at it and see if you need to drain it. We're going to add the stock. We can use soy sauce, it'll be fine. The rosemary sprigs. The garlic, right? Because we could add the garlic in with the vegetables, actually. And our raisins. We're going to bring it to a boil. Then we're going to reduce the heat because we need to cook it, really. We need to have the chicken and everything turn all cooked through. And the vegetables to get kind of, well, kind of edible in the case of parsnips. Yes, you could use potatoes, people are asking. If you're going to do that, you need to peel them. Just because the peels will get loose and it's going to be ugly. It's not you can't eat it, but it's just ugly. We've got brought it all to a boil. It's all looking fine. It smells fabulous. We're going to reduce the heat and cover it and simmer it for about an hour because we want to make sure that that chicken, which we did not cook through, of course, is nice and cooked through and yummy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Smells fabulous in the room if you've got the facilities to put something on the stove and have it simmer for an hour. We could bring it, right? Mm-hmm. You know the chicken is done when you poke it and it runs clear, if people are asking. Okay, now let's make our dumplings. We're going to take the flour and the shortening and the rosemary. We're going to put them all in a bowl, and we're going to mix them together. And then we're going to take a little bit of cold water at a time and squish it all together to make a firm dough, right? It makes our dumplings. It's all together. Mm-hmm. It's nice and firm. It's really easy to do. We're now going to, I like to wet my gloves. I usually wear plastic gloves for this. And make balls, right? Make little dumplings. This will make about 8. You can double the thing. What I'm telling you is they need to float to the top. So you have to make a decision. Because we're going to make them in with the stew and with the chicken and the whole bit. Go into the stock. You've got your balls. The chicken and everything's already been simmering for an hour, so it's nice and hot, and it's really basically cooked through. You take your little dumpling balls, and you stick them right around the top in the chicken broth. This is why you can't have a tremendously deep pot, because you need room for the balls on the top. They don't go down, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And you put them on the top. Into the broth, and you cover that, recover it. It's still on lowish or medium, and we're going to simmer it for another 10 minutes until the dumplings have gotten kind of dumpling-looking. They kind of swell up. They rise. It's self-rising dough. Easiest thing in the world, yeah, these are sometimes called spoon dumplings. That's a good point because people drop them in with a tablespoon, you know, plunk, plunk, plunk. I like to make little balls because it's prettier. And the dumplings dough is a little bit sticky, so I put a little bit of water on my hands or my gloves or whatever and kind of roll them out. Yummy! Delicious. Yes, make lots. But if you're going to do the dumpling thing, they need to rise to the top. You could do them by themselves in a pot with chicken stock because they have rosemary in them, right? It's fine. It's not quite as yummy, and you make an extra pot. But if you need lots of dumpling room because you're going to make lots of dumplings, you could put them in a separate pot that you're going to simmer and cover. And don't do it in water because it'll be no good. But you could do it in chicken stock and put a sprig of rosemary in the chicken stock so it's like rosemary chicken stock because remember there's rosemary in the dumplings. Yeah, it works out just fine if you don't have room because you've made extra chicken. Yeah. My friends, we are out of time. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. If you'd like to find us, we're recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Yes, all of our prior shows, they're archived on that website. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.